ambassador to hear the chief of Columbia's Continental Staff, William L. Shirer. We take you now to Berlin.
Hello, America. Hello, CBS. This is Berlin. The sands are running fast.
And hello. This is America, where the sands are also running fast. Let's check in at the front lines of the fight to save democracy.
That's why I'm trying to figure out how you can come to the conclusion right now that diversity had something to do with this crash.
Because I have common sense, okay?
Welcome back to This is America. I'm your host, Rachel Bitticoffer.
And I'm Aaron Murphy.
Well, it's 3 weeks in and we're already balls deep into a MAGA power grab that can only be described as a fascist coup. But before we get into all that, Aaron, take us through the spin cycle of last week's news.
Yeah, the washing machine is wobbling all over the place, Rachel. This week with market uncertainty over tariffs, and this past week with mass national confusion over Trump's plan or not to freeze all federal funding. It took only until Wednesday and a judge's order for the White House to completely rescind its days-old funding freeze. According to an internal memo, the White House told all federal agencies to, quote, complete a comprehensive analysis to identify programs, projects, and activities that may be implicated by any of the president's executive orders, whatever that means. Of course, a new shitstorm quickly overshadowed that one following Wednesday night's collision of an Army helicopter and an American Airlines passenger plane outside of National Airport, killing 67 people, including figure skaters. And Rachel, listen to this.
You're an acting FAA director.
That is a clip of new Transportation Secretary Sean Duffy walking away from a question about whether anyone was in charge of the FAA at the time of the crash. That's because the answer was no. Thanks to an ongoing dispute with billionaire Elon Musk, who's now in charge of DOGE or the Department of Government Efficiency, the last FAA administrator left on Inauguration Day.
Hey, I'm just going to jump in here real quick to remind everyone, using MAGA's logic for Joe Biden, Donald Trump just personally murdered every one of those figure skaters. I don't make the rules, Aaron.
Well, President Trump, meanwhile, began purging the executive branch of non-loyalists, including prosecutors and FBI officials who investigated any of his four criminal conspiracies. And as part of this effort, the Trump administration sent thousands of civil servants an email titled, A Fork in the Road, trying to bribe them into quitting their careers by offering likely undeliverable severances. So it's more like knife in the back.
Oh, barf, barf.
Oh, and Rachel, Trump cured both climate change and gender dysphoria by scraping all federal websites and databases of any mention of climate change and by dropping the T from the LGB.
And President Trump is back.
And Trump's 27-year-old press secretary made her debut. Caroline Leavitt tried to claim that rescinding the federal funding freeze wasn't rescinding the federal funding freeze, and she made it clear that if you entered the country without proper documentation, you might as well be considered a violent criminal.
So I'm asking, though, he said he was going to focus on those violent offenders first. So is violent offenders no longer the predicate for these people to be deported?
The president has said countless times on the campaign trail, I've been with him at the rallies, I know you've been there covering them too, Peter, that he is focused on launching the largest mass deportation operation in American history of illegal criminals. And if you are an individual, a foreign national, who illegally enters the United States of America, you are, by definition, a criminal. And so therefore, you are subject to deportation.
Government agents, meanwhile, are grabbing undocumented people who made the mistake of trying to obtain legal status, which begs the question, will the DACA database be next? And finally, Rachel, Trump began the week by threatening massive 25% consumer taxes on us for products from our two biggest trading partners, Canada and Mexico. Once it became clear that he was going to get blamed for higher prices, he struck a fake deal to pause tariffs on both countries.
Yeah, it's important for people to know, you know, Mexico had already committed 10,000 troops and Canada had passed a $1.3 billion border security bill. So it's pretty clear to me that Trump saw an exit ramp and took the first one he could find.
Well, the mess over tariffs is doing its damage, though. And if Trump wants Canada as our 51st state, it's going to be an uphill climb. Take a listen to how Canadians responded to the star-spangled banner during an NBA game in Toronto this weekend. This followed similar boos at NHL hockey games this weekend in Ottawa and Calgary. So that wraps up what almost became a financially destructive global trade war. But it ain't over yet.
You need to give us some Xanax first if you're going to dump that much shit on us at once. I mean, where does one even begin with that? I mean, you've got to start somewhere. I think I want to start with Trump's deranged presser in the wake of the devastating plane crash in Washington.
You know, Rachel, what stuck with me for like the first 2 minutes is how normal that news conference started.
I'd like to request a moment of silence.
He started with a moment of silence and some compassionate words he read off a teleprompter in what I guess was an effort to provide comfort in a time of loss and confusion.
As one nation, we grieve for every precious soul that has been taken from us so suddenly. And we are a country of, really, we are in mourning.
But lest you think Trump has finally figured out how to be a consoler-in-chief, he quickly reminded us that he is the furthest thing from normal.
Think of that. The initiative is part of the FAA's diversity and inclusion hiring plan, which says diversity is integral to achieving FAA's mission of ensuring safe and efficient travel. I don't think so. I think it's just the opposite.
Yeah, look, Rachel, we're used to batshit crazy from this guy, but this particular news conference was something else. I mean, it was a matter of minutes before Trump turned the sad moment of confusion into somehow a political attack on, of course, diversity, equity, and inclusion. He blamed DEI on the crash, all facts be damned. And in this time of mourning, after the deadliest air disaster in more than two decades in this country, the nation's consoler-in-chief comforted us with these thoughtful words.
The FAA, which is overseen by Secretary Pete Buttigieg, a real winner. That guy's a real winner. Do you know how badly everything's run since he's run this Department of Transportation? He's a disaster. He was a disaster as a mayor. He ran his city into the ground, and he's a disaster now. He's just got a good line of bullshit.
Look, I think it's important to give you all some context about this DEI stuff. Ever since Virginia's 2021 gubernatorial race with Glenn Youngkin, with CRT, MAGA has been on a crusade to wipe out DEI off the face of the earth. For those of us who cover MAGA for a living, the racist and bigoted verbal drool that came out of Donald Trump's mouth at that press conference was not surprising. It's the foundation of MAGA's war against culture. Hey, Aaron, do you want to know how to tell whether you're a DEI hire?
I do.
Well, are you a straight white male?
Yes and yes.
Good news! You're not a DEI hire.
Rachel, I want to chat with you a little bit about the media coverage of this particular news conference, because I was texting you as I was listening to the NPR version of it, and they actually cut away when shit started going crazy. But somebody sent me a screenshot from CNN that showed the lower third, the Chyron, the graphics on the screen that basically just repeated Donald Trump's claim that this crash was caused by DEI. What are your thoughts on how the media takes news conferences like this and disseminates them to the public at large?
Yeah, the big mistake the media makes is the assumption that everyone understands sarcasm, right? So I'll see them do that often where, you know, Trump's effort to reform FBI, and they'll put reform in single quotes, like that's going to tip everybody off, right? But the fact is you have to be very literate. In fact, as an autistic mom, let me tell you, there's a lot of people who process information very, very literally. So when you have a headline that calls, a purge of the FBI, a reform or a, change or something like that, shakeup, you got to be clear. It's a purge. It's a political purge, right?
Yeah.
And the DEI stuff I find particularly heartbreaking, because I'm not kidding when it's funny to joke like, okay, if you're a straight white male, you're not a DEI hire. But that's literally the MAGA position, right? They do it to every black person or lesbian, the women, the fire chief in Los Angeles who happened to be a lesbian. It really is a focal point of what America has not seen the last 4 years, why we've been studying Trump and they've been doing other things. And I think that they got a pretty bad lesson on that press conference.
Yeah, well, we will be keeping an eye on the media coverage of Donald Trump, of course, as part of this podcast, because holding the media to account for what's happening to this country and its democracy is just as important as the people in power.
It sure is, Aaron. I mean, like I said, as long as I'm in a mass deportation camp with Beltway media, I'll die happy, because I'm going to die lecturing them about normalizing Donald Trump. You know, speaking of DEI, both Tulsi Gabbard and RFK Jr. had their Senate confirmation hearings. Big important jobs about keeping hundreds of millions of people safe. Let's hear what RFK Jr. had to say about vaccines under oath.
Scientists said it saved 3 million
according
lives.
According to FAERS. I don't know, because we don't have a good surveillance system.
Right. So you disagree with the scientific community that...
Oh, I'm agnostic because we don't have the science to make that determination.
Really? Okay.
Well, that was a familiar voice, Senator Bernie Sanders, grilling RFK Jr. about his incredibly ridiculous views on health, science, and, well, reality. And a quick reminder, because it feels like ancient news by now, but Caroline Kennedy, that's President JFK's daughter, sent a scathing letter to senators warning them last week about confirming her cousin Bobby as Health and Human Services Secretary. She wrote, and I'm quoting here, "It's no surprise that he keeps birds of prey as pets because he himself is a predator. His views on vaccines are dangerous and willfully misinformed." And she goes on to say he has gone on to misrepresent, lie, and cheat his way through life. Ouch.
I got to tell you, when your own family members, your own cousin calls you a predator, right? The Kennedy family, you almost feel bad. Obviously, that's a brand being a Kennedy. And to say that the brand has been damaged maybe beyond repair is an understatement. Just kind of all get farted on at once, right?
Yeah, well, it's an embarrassing moment for the Kennedy family. I want to talk about Michael Bennett, senator from Colorado. He was on two committees that both had confirmation hearings for these folks, and he grilled RFK Jr. about some wildly controversial 2023 comments. Let's take a listen.
Did you say that COVID-19 was a genetically engineered bioweapon that targets black and white people but spared Ashkenazi Jews and Chinese people?
I didn't say it was deliberately targeted. I just quoted an NIH-funded, an NIH-published study.
Did you say that it targets black and white people but spared Ashkenazi Jews?
I quoted a study, Your Honor. Okay. I quoted an NIH study that showed that.
I'll take that as a yes.
One of the biggest problems for MAGA is the fact that we have this technology now, Rachel. Believe it or not, it records what people say. And, you know, denying what you say on the record after it's on the record is a tall order. Here's the actual clip from 2023. So this is RFK speaking at a press event in New York City in July of that year. An important note: no mention of NIH funding.
COVID-19 is targeted to attack Caucasians and black people. The people who are most immune are Ashkenazi Jews and Chinese.
Yeah, that's something, isn't it? The Gabbard hearing was also intense. Senator Bennett got feisty again and tried to pin Gabbard, who is up to lead our entire national intelligence system despite close ties to dictators, on whether Edward Snowden is a traitor or not.
We are not here to be a rubber stamp for the President of the United States. So let me ask you again, do you believe, as the chairman of this committee believes, as the vast majority of members of our intelligence agencies believe, that Edward Snowden was a traitor to the United States of America?
Senator, if confirmed as Director of National Intelligence,
I will work with you to make sure that there is not another Snowden likely. It's not a moment to propagate theories, conspiracy theories, or attacks on journalism in the United States. This is when you need to answer the questions of the people whose votes you're asking for to be confirmed as the chief intelligence officer of this nation. As my colleague said, this is not about you. It's about the people that serve the intelligence agencies of the United States. Is Edward Snowden a traitor to the United States of America? That is not a hard question to answer when the stakes are this high.
Senator, as someone who has
your
served
answer,
in
yes
uniform,
or no, is Edward Snowden a traitor to the United States of America?
Since I'm dishing out advice today, here's a short guide to determine whether you're a traitor or not. Did you flee into Putin's arms and become a Russian citizen? I mean, dead giveaway, right? That makes me wonder if he and Tara Reid are now best buddies over there.
Well, and a quick reminder of who Tara Reid is. We're not talking about the actress from American Pie.
And I want to make it up to you.
Oh, yeah? How?
No, we're talking about the other Tara Reid, who back in 2020 tried to implicate Joe Biden on a sexual assault charge decades ago, but her story fell apart amid a long history of lies, and she, well, fled into exile in Russia.
Yeah, nothing tells you somebody is up to no good than when their exit country of choice is Russia, right?
Known for housing the people who get in trouble with the truth in this country.
Yeah.
It tells you something.
Okay, the last thing I want to focus on from the week, though, is this tariff debacle. As we talk about things like tariffs, let's be sure to get the message right, folks. Call it what it actually is. It's a consumer tax. It's a consumer tax on you and me. Apparently, tariffs were too complicated for Donald Trump to understand until he saw the stock market actually tank. But it's so important that we get the messaging right and we call it a Trump tax. Don't say tariffs. Don't say trade wars. Call it a Trump tax. It's a 25% tax on you, the consumer. If I was the chief strategist of a fascist revolution, I would have waited to consolidate power before I started fucking with the good economy. So it doesn't surprise me at all that they're reversing here. And, you know, despite the purging and the plans to reopen Guantanamo, one thing very different about America in 2025 from Germany in 1933, folks, is that Trump's coming into office with a very healthy economy that has been growing. It has grown every month of the past 4 years, despite the inflation crisis.
Yeah. Despite 4 years of beating the bad economy drum and having that message reaffirmed by lazy media coverage about the cost of bacon and eggs, Trump is inheriting a solid economy that produced a GDP growth rate of 2.3% for the fourth quarter of 2024. Now, that may not sound like much, but keep in mind, much of Europe lags far behind. In fact, the last thing economies of Europe need right now is a global tit-for-tat trade war. Sure, inflation is still a bit high from its pre-pandemic levels, but was, until now, largely on the rebound. Trump has been handed a growing economy that produced record stock markets on the regular and maintained low unemployment rates for years. Another thing that benefited the American economy, certainty, at least compared to whatever this is. Exhibit A, stock markets nosedive on news of the Trump tax, and now Trump, who won thanks to ginning up fear and false claims about Biden's economy, is even admitting that he is the one causing higher prices.
We may have short-term some little pain, and people understand that, but long-term, the United States has been ripped off by virtually every country in the world.
So, Rachel, higher prices, a volatile stock market, pissed off allies, economic uncertainty. The economy sure doesn't feel great again compared to, say, a few weeks ago.
Yeah, I mean, I told people, bookmark your reality right now. I mean, I did this all through 2024 because every problem you have today will seem quaint a year from now when Donald Trump is in office. And I don't feel like I was wrong, Aaron. I think a lot of people are terrified about their own ability to keep, you know, their bills paid, keep their jobs. And let's be honest, he is running through the federal budget and the federal government like a King Kong would through the city of L.A., right? Like, he's smashing apart these giant pieces. It's not little chessboard moves. We're talking about, you know, a sledgehammer approach. And in the wake of that, we're seeing things pop up on the internet about people's energy bills going up 25%, about people who are going to lose their jobs because it's funded by an NGO. Like, there's human waste in the tailwind of Elon Musk and Donald Trump right now, and it's just starting.
Rachel, again, I'm going to hit him where it hurts as often as we can, because that book encapsulated so much about what's going on, predicted things, I guess you could say. One of the things that we discuss in that book is the media ecosystem that surrounds Donald Trump and his allies and MAGA in general. How is MAGA America's media ecosystem influencing what's happening now?
Yeah, I mean, the one thing that the Trump people did so well is using their media ecosystem to frame the economy as bad the entire tenure of Joe Biden, right? I mean, obviously got some assist with that with the pandemic, post-pandemic inflation. But what people may not understand is that they didn't just begin that work in the summer of 2024. It was all 4 years of the Biden administration, setting a frame that Biden personally caused inflation that we all know was a product of the world reopening at the same time after the vaccines, and the pressure that caused on supply versus demand, right? But every day, every show, every news event they could exploit, they blamed Biden for inflation. And they spent the same amount of time doing that with Biden's age, okay? And linking him to dementia. The internet was so flooded with clips of Biden's every stumble, every verbal gaffe, every senior moment. Like, you would even take things like him innocently walking away to congratulate World War II vets and turn it into Biden's lost on the stage, right? So anyone who covered both Trump and Biden speeches can tell you that there was one man in the 2024 race who was losing his mind and couldn't put together a coherent thought anymore. And that man was not Joe Biden. It was Donald Trump. Yet when you looked at the public polling, it was Biden. Biden's too old. Biden doesn't have the mental acuity. And voters don't feel like that about Trump. The difference is we don't have that media ecosystem. We aren't doing that long-term strategic work. And, you know, ultimately, that's why Biden's debate performance was terminal. I mean, it was literally underscoring 4 years of what MAGA had been arguing about him.
Well, and speaking of long-term strategy, the Democratic Party elected its new national chair, Ken Martin, over the weekend. Martin is the chair of the Minnesota Democrats. In Minnesota, it's called the Democratic Farmer Labor Party. And he's an alumnus of the late, great Senator Paul Wellstone. Martin has also been serving as president of the Association of State Democratic Committees. And under his leadership, Minnesota flipped their state legislature from red to blue and, according to him, never lost a statewide election under his tenure. This comes at a time when the rest of the Midwest, of course, has been shifting red. And this weekend, Ken Martin was elected the new chairman of the DNC with three priorities. One, unite the Democratic Party. Two, go on offense. And three, get to work taking the fight to Donald Trump and winning back working people.
We got punched in the mouth in November. There's no two ways about it. A lot of people in this country right now are going to need us to walk and chew gum at the same time, meaning we're going to have to fight the extremes of Donald Trump while we make a sharp case to families in both red states and blue states about why they should trust us with their votes. The thing is this, when the Trump agenda fails Americans, which it most certainly will and already has, we have to be there with a legitimate alternative to this chaos.
Now, here's one thing I think folks need to know about Ken Martin, especially because most people haven't ever heard of him. They're much more familiar with another state party chair, the Wisconsin chair, Ben Wickler. When Ken Martin read our book, Hit 'Em Where It Hurts, he immediately ordered three copies for every state party in the nation. So I kind of like Ken. Listen, I want to play for you one more clip from Ken Martin because I know it made many progressives go, hmm?
There are a lot of good billionaires out there that have been with Democrats who share our values, and we will take their money, but we're not taking money from those bad billionaires.
Now, look, some of you might be thinking, there's no such thing as a good billionaire. Yes, there is. Billionaires that have money right now that want to give it to us to protect democracy are all good billionaires. And we need their money. Let me explain what happened with the House, okay? The Republicans have a 3-seat House majority that wouldn't exist right now if California, New York, Virginia, three key blue states with a lot of House seats in them, okay? If they unilaterally passed fair district laws that made it impossible for us to reciprocate gerrymandering to offset the extreme gerrymanders that they're using across these red states, right? So we're literally sitting right now in a minority in the House against this crazy dictator because we do-gooders didn't want to do the thing that we had to do to win. And when we're up against a system financed by billionaires, I mean, the world's richest man is terminating your job today, right? Like, we can't compete without money, folks. I mean, we don't have a new system. We have this system, and this system runs on money. We need money. So if you're a billionaire and you hear my voice, you want to save democracy, you want your children to live in a multicultural, pluralistic democracy, time to open up those checkbooks. And it's not just about spending money on campaigns. It's about building the infrastructure that we've laid out and Hit 'Em Where It Hurts. I know Ken Martin's super interested in it as well. We can't fix this in a year. We have sat on our hands where they have built this infrastructure. They have ALEC, they have Heritage Foundation, they have Federalist Society. I could go on and on. I mean, they've got like 6 different billionaire networks funding infrastructure. When you're a college kid, the Republican Party flies you across the country, takes you to these beautiful, you know, arenas with fireworks. I mean, everyone's got money. We're running shit on elbow grease. And we have 500 volunteer grassroots groups doing our youth turnout. Like, we can't compete without money. And so I know people were wondering about the context of that. And Ken is exactly right. We have to compete on the field we're on, not on the field we wish we played on. And in that field, money walks.
Yeah, and hit them where it hurts, Rachel. We spend some good amount of time talking about how the right tends to fund these really well-organized, effective think tanks that for decades have been planning exactly what's happening, whereas the left, well, we're anybody who knows me knows I love to complain about this, but we tend to focus on, you know, nonprofit organizations that love to sit around and write goals on butcher paper and talk about pronouns. This is not that fight, and we are now in a,
that's right.
Now is the time that we have to fight hard and not sit around and pretend other people are going to do it for us.
The Republican Party has an entire army against us at this point. I mean, it's nuclear weapons versus us. We're little sticks and flowers. Give me love and peace. And I got to tell you, millions of people are going to suffer if we find the way to toughen up. Aaron, we're out of time for the week, but you guys can always follow along on the day-to-day on the Cycle on Substack, and feel free to drop us a line there. Tell us what you think about the show.
And of course, follow Rachel on Twitter if you don't already. She keeps the pig fed there. That's at Rachel Bitticoffer. At Substack, we're at thecycle.substack.com. And as always, please consider a paid subscription. And please share this podcast. It's available now on most platforms. Our book is Hit 'Em Where It Hurts, How to Save Democracy by Beating Republicans at Their Own Game. That's at hitemwhereithurts.com. Rachel, final word of advice for the week ahead.
You know, this week it's going to come from my friend, Ken Martin. He's got his work cut out, but so do we, dude. Ken, congrats on the new important job. Here's the final word from our new chairman of the DNC.
As we move through the next year, Democrats need to ask ourselves each day, whose side are we on? Which side are we on? Are we on the side of the robber baron, the ultra-wealthy billionaire, the oil and gas polluter, the union buster, or are we on the side of the American working family, the small business owner, the farmer, the immigrant, and the students?